Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Morning. Welcome in. Thursday edition of Fesco in the Morning. Along with Bob Fesco, Ryan Witkowski, I'm Josh Klingler. 75th anniversary celebrations are underway, and if you're watching a news station right now, you can't see anything but they've all switched into coverage of the president and other dignitaries speaking on the 75th anniversary of D-Day today.
I think celebration maybe wrong term to use or whatever. Right. Honoring of D-Day 75 years ago. Could you imagine being on that boat? Imagine yourself 75 years ago this morning pulling up on that boat to the beaches of Normandy.
Nope.
Knowing that you're going to be dead in about 10 minutes.
Not tough enough.
This is it, man. This is it. You're going down. You know you're dying. Bullets are flying.
This is not. Yeah, this is a needed mission for our armed forces.
Right.
At your expense.
That's right. You are dying today for the United States of America and the powers of good in this world. We're going in. We're taking care of the enemy, and you are basically going to die. But ultimately, your death is going to result in good for the greater good. And I don't know that I could look, Josh. I wouldn't join the military because I'm not tough enough. I wouldn't join the police force because I'm not tough enough. I'd never be a firefighter because I'm not tough enough. I don't want to be in those type of situations. They don't do well. I don't do well in those type of situations. And so you think back to 75 years ago, guys that are half our age right now in their 20s and 18, 19 year old kids, and they're on that boat. And we've all seen Private Ryan, man. And I think if you haven't seen Saving Private Ryan, you've totally missed one of the great movies of all time. And you're on that boat, and you can hear those bullets flying by, and you can hear them whistling by and whistling by and whistling by. And knowing here in a matter of moments, that door is going to open, you're going to storm the beach, and most likely you are going to be shot, and you've got 10 minutes left of your life. And we hear about, you know, the term heroes all the time when we talk about sports. What a heroic shot. What a heroic play. Nothing was as heroic as what those guys went through 75 years ago today, storming those beaches and basically just giving up their lives because they know that was the right thing to do. And I don't know that I could have ever been in a situation like that. I think the Army does an amazing job and the military does an amazing job of getting you into the mindset of where this is, you know, this is what it is and this is what's going to happen. But even still, you'd have to think deep down inside that those guys that knew they had about 10 minutes left of their life, you knew that they were probably thinking, what the hell did I just get myself into and why am I taking part in something like this? And ultimately, obviously, it worked out for the best, for the greater good, and the right side won the war. But man, I don't know that I've ever been in a situation even close to thinking about death coming to me in about 10 minutes like those guys had to be thinking on those ships as they were getting ready to storm those beaches that day.
Take a little moment today to remember.
Yeah. I mean, it's remarkable. And that's why sometimes when you use that term hero, you kind of go, you're not really a hero. Like Steph Curry dropping close to 50 last night, that's not a hero. Alex Gordon hitting a home run in the World Series, that's not a hero. Those guys that risked their lives that got off that boat and just charged into a stream of bullets firing at them, That's what a hero is all about. And everybody that serves in the military and the police force and the fire department, all the first responders, those guys and gals, those are heroes. And we throw that term around so loosely in sports, you know, and it's natural. It's just what we do. But that's not heroic. What you do on a baseball diamond or a basketball court or a football field, that's not heroic. That's just you know, using a skill that you have. Being a hero is running onto a beach and getting shot and saving the world.
You mentioned Steph game 3 of the NBA Finals last night. He did all he could. Career high 47 in the loss as Toronto. Man, the pressure shifted before tip-off to, there's no way in heck you guys can lose this game.
Yeah.
Well, as soon as Klay Thompson was ruled out for this one, Kevin Durant, of course, still not playing. If he does play, he's going to be like a month out.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Can you believe it's already been that long, yeah, right?
Well, it's just series and then a series. And you're like, okay, is he going to play? Is he going to play? Is he playing? Now you're like, is he going to be like majorly rusty when he does? Mm-hmm. If he does, if he's able to get healthy enough. But this feels like Joel Embiid for Kansas in the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, it really does. It does kind of have that feel. Well, if they make it to the Sweet 16,
they make it to the next round.
Okay. No, he was never going to play in the Sweet 16.
Maybe if he gets to if they get to the next round, maybe he'll be ready. I don't know if Durant's going to play or not. But by the time tip-off hit last night, I mean, Toronto had all the pressure in the world. Like, if you don't win this game, just pack it in.
Yeah, there's no reason to even play anymore if you don't win this game.
And now they win this game, and everything, Toronto. Well, look at the guts of Toronto.
Yeah.
And it's funny how the storyline, like, changes. Golden State's bench was awesome when they were contributing all their roles on a night where they needed to do a lot more. Nobody really showed up. And suddenly Golden State's mortal and Toronto's great again.
Yeah.
It's amazing how one game just flips the switch all the time.
Yeah, it really is. And it's amazing how we live in this hyperbolic world, too, of sports. And look, we're all guilty of it. Me maybe more so than just about anybody. But, you know, every morning I get up and one of the first things I do is I read the sports page at USA Today. It reminds me of being a child and going on vacation and getting to USA Today and grabbing the sports page and thinking, wow, this is the greatest thing ever.
We better stay at a hotel that's got USA Today.
USA Today, right? Like, that was a big thing for me. Do you have a free continental breakfast in USA Today? And if you check both of those boxes, I didn't care if you had fleas, I was staying at that motel, right? And so I always loved it. I always felt like I was getting something special, you know, when I was a kid and I would open up that USA Today sports page and the red section would be there. And it would always be better no matter where you lived in the country. The USA Today sports page was better than anything you could ever get at home because it had so much information in it, man. And for a dork like I was growing up, and I'm sure for you as well, when you got to read that copy of USA Today sports page, you didn't even want to throw it away even days later because you're like, oh my God, there's so much great information here. And so here I am at 42 years old and I'm still reading every day the USA Today sports page because A, it gives you a lot of good information, and B, it just kind of reminds me of being a kid again and driving all over and going to bad motels as my mother was trying to get the best rate in town. And so I'm reading the USA Today, and the one thing that they really do, I think, better than just about anyone when it comes to sports is the hyperbole of their sports pages and their sports headlines. And I saw one today that said, this is going to be now the most important test ever in the dynasty of the Golden State Warriors. Like, people forget the Golden State Warriors ended up losing an NBA Finals just a couple of years ago to the Cleveland Cavaliers and to LeBron James. And people forget, like, that part of history happened. I don't think they're facing their most important test ever in their dynasty, like USA Today is suggesting. I think right now what they're facing in Golden State is being everybody else. I mean, for so long, they've had the luxury of not having to deal with injuries and not having to deal with all the ancillary stuff that comes along with the rigors of an 81-game regular season and then a 40-game postseason on top of that. Golden State has never really had to deal with the adversity of having to have two of their best players on the bench because they were injured. And that's what they're dealing with right now. I don't think this is the most important test ever in their dynasty. If they end up losing this series to Toronto, I don't think it soils anything that they do. And I see comments being made yesterday.
In fact, it probably only just waters down a little bit what Toronto's doing, unfortunately.
Unfortunately,
for them.
It does. That's a really good point, Josh. I don't think about that.
I don't think it would be
as much of a
knock on Golden State as it would be. Well, could Toronto really have beaten them or not?
Yeah, right.
This is like Houston's titles with Jordan being suspended.
Correct.
What would they have won if Jordan was able to play or chose to or whatever?
Suspended.
I say suspended. Okay. Yeah. It feels like it would just kind of sully that a little bit. Like,
right.
Was Toronto good? And they're not going to get the credit they deserve.
No, they're really not. Yeah. You're right. People are going to say, well, if KD and you know, Klay Thompson were healthy the whole time, then Golden State wins the series, which is probably true. But they aren't. I mean, these are the circumstances right now that we're looking at. Some of the things I heard yesterday was, you know, Steph Curry, I think Whitlock even said this, like, Steph Curry needs to win this finals to cement his legacy. And then I saw somebody else say Steve Kerr needs to win this to go from good coach to great coach. And I'm thinking to myself, what? Like, where are these hot takes coming from? Are we that bored in June that we're coming up with these random hot takes that are absolutely false? Like, Steph Curry, to me, does not need to win the NBA Finals to become a great player and to cement cement his legacy. That cat's legacy is already cemented in stone as the greatest shooter I think any of us have ever seen, just an ultimate team leader, and wills his team to victory. I mean, we've seen Steph do some amazing things out on the basketball court. And I think right now, I think Steve Kerr is probably in your top two when it comes to best basketball coaches in the NBA right now. I don't know where Nick Nurse ranks on this list, but I can tell you what, Steve Kerr and Greg Popovich are one and two in the NBA right now, and I don't know that there's even a close number three of who the best basketball coach in the NBA is right now. And Popovich is always going to be number one because he just wins all the time with whoever you throw out there and finds ways to win championships and gets the job done. So Pop's always going to be on the top of that list. And Steve Kerr played for Pop and played for Phil, so he's got the best of both of them. I mean, how could you at this point in time even question whether or not Steph's legacy is cemented and whether or not Steve Kerr is a great head coach? I think if you're doing that today or doing that during the series, you've totally missed what went on with the last 5 years. Steve Kerr is the second best coach in the NBA, and I think right now Steph Curry has cemented himself as a great player and as a Hall of Famer if he never takes another shot.
I don't know how it was framed, but I would look at it as if Steph Curry leads this team through these injuries, and he's the NBA Finals MVP, which he's kind of on his way to doing.
Sure.
If not Kawhi, I guess, if Toronto wins. But then Curry is cement, because that's like the, like, what more could you do?
Yeah.
I think that would be the final nail of, well, there's nothing left for him to do. He's got four titles and two MVPs or whatever, and he's in that rarefied air, and he's led this team through this bit of drama and injuries to another title. It cements.
Cements, I guess,
because I think he's, you know, he's pretty well regarded already, but this would be like, this is kind of your hands up in the moment. Like, what more do you want?
Mm-hmm.
He did this again. So I think there's an opportunity for him, but in the same vein, if they lose this series, it doesn't to me say, oh, well, he's got some things yet to prove. I'm not buying that either, if that argument's been made, but I think there's, And then Kerr, it's ridiculous. You're just prisoner of the moment.
Right.
I can't say anything more than that involving Steve Kerr. I mean, he's done what he's done.
Yeah, he's been unbelievable. I mean, he took a team, you know, that couldn't get over the hump when Mark Jackson was the head coach, and then got them over the hump and has had them as the number one seed, I think, every year since he's been the head coach out in Golden State. And there is something to be said. Like, I think Joe Torre is one of the greatest managers of all time, because Joe Torre, I don't know what Joe Torre's X's and O's were, Josh. I don't know how Joe Torre managed a bullpen, but I know how he kept those egos in check. And when you're managing that late Yankees dynasty and you've got David Wells and David Cohn and Derek Jeter and Andy Pettitte and Roger Clemens and Jorge Posada and Bernie Williams, and, you know, the list goes on and on and on, and Mariano Rivera, of these great baseball players, you have to manage the egos. You have to manage the people. And
that Rod guy too.
Yeah, A-Rod, he came in a little bit later. I was thinking of the early generation. Yeah, yeah. But the way he managed the situation between A-Rod and Jeter as well. I mean, look at the way that thing went down. You're bringing in Alex Rodriguez, who is a better shortstop than Derek Jeter, and you're telling him you're now playing third base, and not one time did you really hear boo from anybody in that organization. And I think that's what it's all about. And I think that's what Steve Kerr's done a masterful job in, because you've got Kevin Durant, who just can't get out of his own way. Nobody can help that guy. But you got Klay Thompson, you've got Steph Curry. I mean, you just look at those big three, and not one time do you hear somebody complaining, I'm not getting shots, I'm not getting mine. I think being a head coach in professional sports is so much more about the way you manage people than it is the way you go about your X's and O's or managing a bullpen or anything like that. And if you don't know how to manage people and control your team from a people standpoint, you're never going to be successful when it comes to the X's and O's standpoint. And I think that's why guys like Steve Kerr and Joe Torre, they get all the credit in the world, because people say, oh, it's easy to manage a team or coach a team when you got a lot of superstars. It is, but it's not easy to keep those superstars in checks, because egos sometimes get the best of you. And I think I think Popovich as well did a great job of it. Pop and Kerr and Joe Torre, I think they did an amazing job of keeping egos in check.
Was it the chicken or the egg's fault? We'll discuss next.
Fesco in the morning.
Back in Scheme or players?
That's the old question, isn't it, Josh? The scheme or the player?
Chiefs decided this offseason was both.
Uh-huh.
And made a whole bunch of changes on their defense. They wanted to end the debate quickly. Like, it's both.
Right.
All of the above.
Everybody.
We're just going to clean house. Coaches, players, the whole thing, so that there's no debate. But Justin Houston, after being released by the Chiefs, ends up with the Colts. He's going to play now in Indy, and that's looked at as a pretty good addition for Indy defensively.
Sure.
Someone else's trash can be your treasure. You have an opportunity to bounce back with the Colts, whatever. But he appeared on the NFL Network and discussed a little bit of why he selected Indy.
Just wanting to be in a 4-3. I think I didn't get enough credit for me being in a 3-4 and dropping a lot of the time, so my sack numbers wasn't as high as I would like for them to be. So just being in the 4-3 and don't have to think about dropping no more is something I want to do for the rest of my career. I just want to go for it and rush the pass.
And you think about being in a 4-3, I guess he could have been here and said he did talk to the Chiefs initially when they made the changes about doing so. But apparently they had decided to move on, and he'd feel better actually in the same type of defense the Chiefs are going to be running.
Well, I think there's a lot that factors into this, release of Justin Houston and switching defenses. Didn't Justin Houston get 22 sacks in a 3-4 defense?
That's correct.
Am I not mistaken there? Okay, yes. So he did get 22 sacks in a 3-4 defense, right? So I'll just leave that out there for you to come to any kind of conclusion that you want.
As you wonder, he would have done in a 4-3.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah, like 30, had like 20.
Sure, he would have.
Two and a half.
The Chiefs, nobody complained about the scheme for the first couple of years of Bob Sutton when they were a top 10 defense in the NFL, right? The scheme was okay. Then I don't remember anybody complaining about the scheme. We just bitched about Alex Smith during those few years. So what happens is
I think the complaints were at that point about the flexibility of the scheme, though.
Yeah, but I think
you saw some of the early writing on the wall that there were going to be issues because of the fact that he wouldn't let players roam the field. He wouldn't put their best corner on the best wide receiver. Like, there was some inflexibility. So I think there were some concerns, but you're right. I mean, by and large, like, people weren't, saying fire Bob Sutton
or players complaining about it either.
Right.
They're not going to be.
So a couple of years later, then the scheme is no good after players get A, injured, and B, old, and C, just decide it's not in their spirit to play, then it becomes the scheme's fault. That's why, like to me, I understand a change needed to be made at head coach, and I am in no way sitting here saying that Bob Sutton should have been retained. But sometimes we get so far over our skis of blaming the scheme, we fail to look at the people that are contributing to that scheme. Justin Houston wasn't released because he was a bad football player anymore. Number one, he made a lot of money, okay? So they wanted to get out from that. And number two, with Justin Houston, I think a lot of it had to do, Josh, with they didn't feel like they could trust and rely on Justin Houston anymore. And once you get to that point with any employee or in a relationship, like if you're dating a girl and all of a sudden she's cheating on you or not returning your phone calls or stuff like that, and you feel like you can't trust her anymore, well, that's when it's time to pull the ripcord and get out. And I think ultimately that's where the Chiefs kind of felt they were with both Justin Houston and Eric Berry in this situation, is that they just felt like they couldn't rely on those guys anymore. And it got to the point where it was a relationship that got stale for both sides and it needed to end. And so you get rid of the players, you get rid of the coordinator, you get rid of the scheme, and you do wholesale changes like they did on that side of the football. And even with the scheme change here in Kansas City, I don't think Justin Houston had a prayer of coming back to this organization, because I just think the organization and the coaching staff and everybody involved in the front, it was time to move on. It was time to part ways with each other.
I can respect their decision to determine they needed to go in a different direction with him. But I can also say, hey, I was saying for a long time, why is Bob Sutton trying to make Justin Houston an all-around linebacker?
And you had, and you've been saying that for the last two years.
Like,
yeah.
He had a unique, great skill set. I feel like that they were over trying to make him a full scale, do everything, drop back in coverage, stop the run, all kinds of things linebacker, when he may have been better suited to be a one trick pony.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what he's saying. I didn't get enough credit for what I was doing in dropping back. My preference would be to have my sack numbers up, which would be me putting my head down and going towards the quarterback,
right,
which he may get the opportunity to do now, and said he would have welcomed trying to do that here. But I also respect the Chiefs' decision, saying, well, I mean, Steve Spagnuolo probably watched all kinds of – he, I think, had – if you sat him down, he's like, I spent that year putting together my dream defense.
Right.
Here's the types of players I'm looking for. Then he took that to what he was looking at the Chiefs, and I don't think he fits. I don't think he fits. I don't think he fits. I can completely respect that as well.
Mm-hmm.
But to I don't find Justin Houston blaming the scheme. I'm Justin Houston saying what I was saying. Why the hell are you trying to make me an all-around linebacker when I really rush the quarterback well, and you kind of stopped me from doing that?
I wonder if you look at a situation like Justin Houston is in and he's making the money that he's making. Do you think, and maybe this is just me as a normal person thinking like this, like, do you think the organization looks at a guy like Justin Houston, sees the money that he's making, and they say, we need to get more out of him than just rushing the passer? You know, because Dee Ford was a one-trick pony on the other side.
I think you say we can get younger and a little more.
No, I mean, like, during the course of the season, you're in like week six of the season, and you're saying this guy's making $20 million
a year. Why you paid him $20 million,
right? And so, and then let's factor in what you had on the other side as well. You know, since Dee Ford got released, I told you he would have only played 30% of the snaps this year, right? Remember when I've been saying that he would have only played 30% of the snaps this year had the Kansas City Chiefs kept him? So how can you have over the course of a season? Let's go back to like October of last year. You got Dee Ford and you got Justin Houston. You've got a one-trick pony in Dee Ford. There's no way you can make Dee Ford do anything more than rush the quarterback. That's all he was. So you can't really have two guys out there on the field that are just one-trick ponies. Eventually, somebody's got to do something at that linebacker position. And Dee Ford was a lost cause. They did not believe that Dee Ford could do anything but rush the passer. So that leaves Justin Houston. And you've got to say, all right, Justin, we're going to need you, man. You got to be a team player. We got this other guy on the other side of the field who just rushes the passer, does a nice job of rushing the passer, but by God, he can't do anything else. We know that you can rush the passer, but we also have confidence in you that you can do some other things.
He wasn't good at those other things.
But Dee Ford was worse at those other things. And
lesser of two evils is where we're going with this?
Well, that's yes. I mean, that's exactly what we're doing here. That's exactly what we're going with, because you had a guy that was completely incompetent in Dee Ford and only competent at rushing the passer. Asking him to do anything else would have been like trying to make the earth move. And then on the other side, you've got Justin Houston, who may not be great at going back into coverage and doing some of those other things. But, pal, we need you, man. We got this other guy on the other side who brings nothing to the table except getting after the quarterback. We can't have two of the same players. So we're going to ask you to do some things that you may not like to do and may not want to do and may not be in your best interest. But for the interest of the teams, we need you to do this kind of stuff. And that's what it ultimately boiled down to. Dee Ford was an extreme one-dimensional player. Justin Houston may be a one-dimensional player, but at least he had some ability to go out there and do some other things for you when you needed him to do those other things.
The reason that you paid Justin Houston is because of that one dimension that you speak of. Now, I don't disagree. Like, you do want and you hope to get more type of productivity out of it, but it's about maximizing the players and the positions that they're at. And, I mean, let's face facts. I would much rather have Justin Houston rushing the passer than Dee Ford.
No question. Then what do you do? Then who do you put at that other side? Because Dee Ford was a major liability then.
Look, I don't know if there's a real good answer for that, Bob. But, again, I think that what it always came back to with me with Bob Sutton was the fact that there wasn't even flexibility to say, hey, you want to know what? I need to maximize the star players that I have here. The all-pro talents that I have aren't being utilized correctly. And instead, I want to, you know, have Antonio Brown be covered by number 50.
Right, and everybody's like going to remember that, you know, forever and a day, and rightfully so.
But it was crunch time. Yeah, rightfully so.
Yeah, they will.
Kind of a big play.
Absolutely. And that's why Bob Sutton is no longer here. And paying Justin Houston is part of the reason why John Dorsey is no longer part of this organization.
And look, I don't disagree. I don't want to absolve any of the players of any blame, because, like, it does ultimately come down to you making
the
plays.
And age factors in. Like, we forget these guys get old and they slow down,
but
too.
But, like, let's not act like we haven't had bosses before that haven't put us in the best position to succeed. Right?
Right, sure.
Like, there are bosses that do that on a regular basis, and that was what the problem was with Bob Sutton. Now,
Was also working with the people that he had as well. And you have two guys, and you said it, the lesser of two evils. You put the guy that's a little bit better in a worse situation. I don't know how much more I can say about Dee Ford for people to understand. The guy didn't get it, okay?
I just don't know how many more times you need to hear from players who have left the system that, man, we wish we could have done something different. I wish I could have been in a better position. Hell, we heard it from your boy Steven Nelson already this year.
Oh, yeah.
We've heard it from Justin Houston now.
Marcus Peters made
allusion to it as he was on the way out the door.
Because players that leave are always in the best mindset when they leave an organization,
too. I just
don't
think
that
they have a reason to really lie about it. I mean, I understand.
Of course they do, because they don't want to admit that they got old and they're not that good anymore. or weren't that good to begin with.
You don't think Houston's going to be that good this year?
No, no. I will. I'll take the. I'll set the over under at 11 sacks, and I'll take the under on that.
It was 9.5 and 9 the last 2 years.
I'll take the under.
Steven Nelson ought to be thanking the Chiefs, man. They got him paid.
They really did, right?
69306 on the Protein House Eat with a Purpose text line. We will shout it out coming up in just a few minutes. And more bricks are coming. All right, next.
Fesco in the morning.
Six 9 3 0 6 on the Protein House Eat with a Purpose text line. We will shout it out coming up in just a couple of minutes. Anything you want to discuss? College basketball slipped this in under the radar yesterday.
I'm excited.
You're excited for?
Should I be excited though? I don't know. No, I don't, should I be excited?
No, because you're going to see more shooting.
Yeah.
The NCAA is moving back its 3-point line. They're joining the international basketball distance, which I don't believe is measured in inches, even though that's how they're measuring the one here in the U.S.
Yes.
Yeah, the international. I don't believe the international distance is 22 feet, 1¾ inches. I'm guessing it's metric, but whatever.
You and I measure things in inches, though, don't we?
Yeah. Well, we're not international.
Like centimeters?
So they're moving the 3-point line back from 20 feet, 9 inches. To 22 feet, 1¼ inches. So almost a
48,000 centimeters.
Almost a foot and a half.
Almost a whole foot and a half. Almost 18 yeah. inches they're moving this thing back. So that's like a Subway sandwich and then a half of a Subway right. sandwich. Okay.
Or a full-size Goodsense sandwich.
Goodsense is 18 inches for a full-size one, is it really? Yeah. You got to double the meat on that Penny Club, right?
Oh,
it's
baby.
Good food that makes good sense.
So I think I understand what you're trying to do. Be more in line with international, open up the lane, create driving avenues.
They want to be more international because they know most of their players are going international and not NBA.
Cut down some of the reliance on the three by making it a more difficult shot. I think it's going to backfire and everybody's going to try to be chucking longer threes.
I like the assertion that it would create better offensive flow because of the spacing.
The spacing.
Yes. They always say the spacing. What it's going to create is more bad shots from three.
So you're going that route.
And more errant passes as
well. My first initial reaction to this, trademark pending, was not that it was going to create more bad shots, but that maybe people would give up those shots and try to kick it inside now because they knew that shot is a little bit more difficult to take.
That's what they're hoping.
I'm hoping for that as well. I don't think I'm going to see that, though, do I?
I think you're going to see still
bad
guys
basketball.
Showcasing distance shooting for the next level.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
do they want so they can get to Europe and play?
The line is really closer and almost there for the NBA. I'm going to show you can shoot from there.
Yeah, I think also too the college game should go with the trapezoidal lane if they're doing more of the international type of stuff because, like I said earlier, that's where most of their players are going to Europe. They're not going to be a lot of college basketball players that are necessarily leaving for the NBA. I mean, you look at the NBA draft and most of it is guys from overseas now coming over to the United States to play basketball in the NBA that are getting drafted, and you see a lot of those college kids. I would say they're obviously more college kids are going overseas now to play basketball than they are staying here to play in the NBA just based on sheer numbers and the amount of teams internationally than there are right now. So I understand why the NCAA wants to go more towards an international game to give their guys a chance to better succeed on the next level. And if you can use these international rules in the collegiate game, then you're going to have a better opportunity to survive in Europe and Turkey and Istanbul when you go over there and play after your college days are done.
There you go. So the line's moving back only for Division I.
Right.
Division II and Division III are going to get the opportunity to get a one-year one-year delay in order to, paint their line.
Right. They said because of cost measures. So how much could it cost to have the janitor roll out there with a roll of tape and move the thing back 18 inches? Like, why is this a cost-saving issue?
You know Division I's got that guy. Ops. Two and three, you're not sure they've got that guy.
Then the coach do that.
Could be the coach doing it, too. So they're going to get an extra year to Division I's going to have it this upcoming season. Two and three the following season.
Yeah, well, the coaches can get out there and do that at Division II and III. I mean, that's kind of what you do at Division II and III. You carry the water cooler, you get the sandwiches, and you paint the new lines.
I would think.
This is not rocket science we're dealing with. This is a basketball line.
And then also, there's going to be a change to the shot clock.
This is good. This is really good.
The 30-second shot clock will not be reset to 30 if you get an offensive rebound.
Right. It's going to be reset to 20, yeah. Which makes a lot of sense when they went through the reasoning. They're like,
well, they're already in the half
court. Right. You're already in the half court, right? It makes. I didn't even think about that. I'm like, that's a brilliant
idea. I mean, I've
always
thought the 30-second shot clock was too much anyway.
Remember when it was 45 seconds?
The thing that's always confused me about college basketball is that it doesn't like everything we do in college is supposed to prepare us for the next step in, yes, our careers, right? College basketball doesn't seem to do that. Like, it seems to be a
20-minute halves.
Yeah,
college basketball does nothing like the professional ranks do. Nothing.
I mean, meet me in the middle somewhere. Let's start some quarter systems going on, yeah, here. Maybe extend the amount of minutes you're going to play.
Right.
Make the 3-point line where it's supposed to be when you're a pro. Like, I don't understand some of the things.
3-point line, lane, timeouts, length of quarters versus halves. Tournament instead of normal playoffs. Like, nothing in college basketball that they do really translates to the NBA, and that's why most guys have to go to Europe. Let's shout it out. 6-9-3-0-6.
Or professional in something else.
Or professional in something else. That's right. Like, you know, rental cars.
816 asks, what's the worst type of fried potato?
I think, to me, the shredded hash brown is the worst one.
The shoestring fry. Complete waste of time.
I agree. That's
it's fried. I don't think there is one. There's no... They're all good.
Is the shredded hash brown's not fried?
Well, it's
is
like it, on the flat top, you
on
know,
on a griddle.
Not even, but the flat top, you know, the big silver flat top. I guess I don't know if that's fried or not, but they're never crispy enough.
Well, just have them cook it a little longer.
I do. They even say extra crispy on the hash browns, and they're
upsetting.
Still not crispy.
That's upsetting. What's the worst thing you ever did to your significant other, past or present? What? Like your current significant other, or
past or present? You know, worst thing. I don't know.
I like to think I'm a pretty good person.
Yeah.
I impregnated my wife twice.
That's it?
So yeah, I guess you could put it that way. Yeah.
I mean,
yeah. You wouldn't want to go through that yourself.
She didn't seem to care until 9 months later, and then she was a real bee about it.
You wouldn't want to go through that yourself. That's what you're saying.
No, not at all.
I think you telling your wife flat out that you love your mother more than her is like the worst thing you could do.
I've also told her she wasn't the best I've ever had.
Wow.
Jeez.
Wow. This woman likes you.
Didn't work out for me.
Are you just pushing the envelope now that she's on summer vacation and sleeping in and eating bonbons all day?
She's not Peggy Bundy.
Oh.
Get rid of one forever. Pizza, barbecue, or burgers? Ooh.
I'd take my own life instead, I think. I get rid of myself.
Get rid of passing
on any of those.
And I just kill Bob.
I choose to plead the fifth because Kansas City wouldn't want like my answer.
Interesting.
Oh, wow.
Better career, Garth Brooks or George Strait?
George Strait. He's known as the Godfather, right?
I don't know. I mean, Garth Brooks was in fantasy camp, so I'm going to go with Garth. I don't know anything about country music, full disclosure.
He got away with that dumb transition to rock.
David Allen, I don't give a damn.
He did that Chris Gaines.
Gaines.
He survived being Chris. I think, you know, he went to Chris Gaines and still working for him.
Mousetrap is the worst board game ever, says the 816.
I totally agree. And
have you ever
kid
played
has
the game? It's super late.
By the time you set it up, you just want a cocktail and go to bed.
No, you just want to set up that little pool and see how far you can get the guy to dive.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
Diving
that game
for distance
sucks.
What? I don't understand that one. I got beef. You guys mentioned the Good Sense Penny Club was the best sandwich at Good Sense. Is the ultimate because it's got bacon. What do you have against bacon?
Nothing.
Oh, the Ultimate Club is nice, but they take off, what is it? They take off the roast beef or the ham. Take off one of the meats.
I'm just telling you, with the Penny Club, it saves you going, what do I really want? Because you get the beef, you get the ham, you get the turkey. It's all there.
In case you're trying to listen to us in HD, you just add on the bacon. Yeah. In case you want to hear us in HD, 106.5 HD2 is now our HD sub channel.
There you go.
96.5 HD2 is something vastly different. Found out I'm having my fourth boy. My wife hates me.
Oh wow.
God, that is my nightmare, by the way.
No, but see, here's why it's not a nightmare, because you don't have to pay for four weddings, man. You got the boys. Go. That's good.
That's still a thing.
I don't know.
I doubt it.
Gonna be for me. I'm sure. I got two.
Good luck with I'm envisioning the sit down with Fesco and the potential in-laws. Like, yeah, girls, we ain't paying a thing.
No, the girl's side pays for everything. The boy's side is the one who skates.
You're gonna be like, let's do this. These rules are antiquated.
Yep.
Which they are.
Just 816.
Everything will be on trade, Josh.
That's true. Nice.
They already know they're getting married at the Westin.
Yeah, I was saying the Westin's
the Westin.
The Red Door Grill's gonna
Red Door.
Red Door and Smokehouse
has got the dinner before. Yes.
Definitely getting all the jewelry at Kriegel Mess.
Yeah, absolutely. They know what's going on.
Golden Oak Lending. Gonna get them hooked up
first
with a mortgage.
House. New vodka's gonna be served. Look.
Hashtag ad. Last one for you. 816 would like to know.
Dan's getting the dresses and the tux?
Oh, yeah. 100% Dan.
I take thee to be my lovely wedded wife. Hashtag ad. I'm going to build it right in the vows.
Good. 816 wants to know, are you allowed to let one rip at the urinal if someone's standing next to you?
I think the restroom, you're fine. Yes.
I mean, if you can't fart in the bathroom,
where else can you fart?
Yeah.
Go for it.
Somebody says that Casey's new Philly cheesesteak sub is life.
Really?
I'm listening.
Okay, continue on. Why is it so good?
I have a real hard time getting anything other than a slice of sausage pizza.
That way, though, when you go to Casey's? Like, you look at everything and you're like, if I don't get the pizza, I've failed.
Yeah, I know.
I guess I can get that and a slice.
You
of
could.
Pizza.
You really could.
Real fat guy.
You know what you could do? You could take that slice of pizza, put it on the cheesesteak, and
like
eat it all at once.
Wrap the cheesesteak in the slice of pizza?
No, just open the cheesesteak, put the pizza in between the two buns, and then eat it.
How about I order the cheesesteak sub, but instead of the sub bun, I just have them put it on the pizza.
On the pizza?
I'll just taco up the pizza like that.
I think it'd be very hard, very difficult.
That does sound difficult to eat.
Yeah. Not enough pizza surface area on the sandwich, if you know what I mean.
Now that your stomach is growling, that is today's edition of Shout It Out.
I do think urinal farts are a really aggressive move, though, but if you're going to announce your presence with authority anywhere, it needs to be the bathroom.
Now you're no longer hungry. The key play is coming up. Your chance to get registered for the Father's Day prize pack and what the internet was freaking out about, yesterday. Next.
Fesco in the morning.
Time for the key play brought to you by Broadway Deli, the official deli of 610 Sports Radio in the Crossroads. Open for breakfast, lunch, and can cater breakfast and lunch as well. Broadway Deli, the official deli of 610 Sports Radio. Our key play comes from last night's NBA Finals.
Leonard now, guarded by Curry, crosses over, splits the double, gets it to Van Vliet, three in the air, good! Freddie hoisted it up near the clock, and it went down. Straight through the bottom of the well, as clean as a whistle.
Toronto Raptors Radio Network, Fred Van Vliet, the former Wichita State Shocker with the big three, one of 17 made threes last night for Toronto.
Are whistles like notoriously clean?
So yeah, people say that all the time.
Those are the standard of cleanliness, the whistle.
I mean, it makes sense.
No, there's a lot of things we say that don't make sense. Believe me, 4 hours a day, I should know.
Toronto beats Golden State 123-109 for a 2-1 series lead.
That name, who shot that shot, say it.
Fred Van Vliet.
One of the hardest names for me to say.
Fred Van Fleet.
Yeah,
you want to say Fleet or?
Yeah, and
Van Fleet.
And yet you just spout Giannis like it's nothing.
Giannis Antetokounmpo. Saying Detroit Tigers is hard for me if I don't concentrate on that.
What about
Red Wings is very hard, too. Detroit Red Wings.
You want to Bobble Walters it up?
I do want to Bobble Walters it up. Like, it's really hard. So, like, every time I say Fred Van Vliet, I got to think about saying Fred Van Vliet.
Do it either, am I?
Because it's one of those words. It's one of those names. It's hard for me to say.
Time to get someone registered for the Father's Day gift pack. Pellet smoker from Apex Brew and Barbecue Supplies. Voucher for a great bottle of bourbon from Brookside Wine and Spirits. On the 45s, we get somebody registered for the Father's Day gift pack. 645, 745, 845, 945. Ryan, make it simple.
Oh, you know I keep it simple for everyone. All you have to do is listen for this.
I love you, Dad.
When you hear that, be caller number 8-913-576-7610. See, there's somebody calling right now. I guess it's not simple enough for that guy. But everyone else, when you hear that sounder, be caller number 8-913-576-7610. I will get you registered to win an amazing Father's Day prize pack.
I heard from somebody the other day, and it makes kind of sense. They're like, I listen on the app, so everything's delayed, so I try to call a little bit earlier so I can have an opportunity to win. And I said, okay, I can see. So maybe the folks that are calling in right now are listening on the app, and they're trying to position themselves like they've nailed the perfect time.
It's a strong possibility. I'm still going to hang up.
I understand, and you should.
Time for today's edition of What the Internet Was Freaking Out About.
I get my news from the internet like every other normal person under 70.
Has the whole world gone insane?
It's all fantastic with the internet.
I'm not freaking out.
Oh, they have the internet on computers now.
Oh, won't somebody please pick up the children?
Oh, the internet.
So the NBA may be taking a step, backing down from using the word owner due to racial insensitivity. Draymond Green of Golden State argued against using the term on the LeBron James, The Shop on HBO late last year.
When your product is purely the labor of people, then owner sounds like something that is of a feudal nature.
You shouldn't say owner.
I agree.
When you
what do you mean you should say, Dre?
CEO or chairman, when you think of a basketball team.
Or you should say majority shareholder.
There you
something
go.
Something like that. But when you think of that's a basketball team, like nobody don't think of the Golden State Warriors and like think of that damn bridge. Like they think of the players that make that team.
Which bridge? The bridge is on the front of your jersey?
Exactly. You don't even know what the it's called. It's like.
Not a real great case there by those guys to say why the term owner shouldn't be used. They should, when your product is primarily the labor of people, isn't that every business? Like, doesn't every single business in the world rely on the labor of people to make it work?
They're taking the first step of what they believe should be every business.
Well, then say every business,
no
not
business,
just the NBA.
No business should have
an owner. The NBA's product is the people, though.
Well, I mean, so is intercoms.
So is every business.
So is
not every business. Yeah, McDonald's business isn't the people; it's the burgers.
But if you don't have the people, you don't have the burgers.
Well, sure, but I mean, I feel like we have the technology to figure out robot burger flipping around.
That's not that far away.
That one I wouldn't use. That
we already have the kiosk things that I go in there. I don't need the person to take my order anymore.
Thankfully, we still need the people because I want people to have jobs.
Right, and so when something goes wrong and the robot screws up and puts mayo on your Big Mac, and who do you complain to? The robot who goes, I don't know. Like, wait, who are you going to complain to?
That robot would know damn good and well it's not mayo; it's special sauce.
You're going to argue with a robot there. So
I want to see that robot's manager.
If you want to take the term owner in its general sense for every company in the world and do away with it, I can listen. We just can't say the NBA or Major League Baseball or McDonald's or Pepsi or whatever the case may be. And some, you know, Clark Hunt doesn't go by the owner; he goes by the chairman.
Chairman CEO, isn't it? Yeah.
Well, I think Donovan's the president. So, and
I want to say he's chairman and CEO.
Yeah, I think it is chairman and CEO. So he doesn't go by owner. There's a number of NBA owners.
But also,
who
he's
go
not
by
a
chairman.
He's not
CEO.
A singular owner.
Right. The family owns the team.
There
may
be a business where
that's a good point.
There's an owner.
Right.
And I guess maybe we just have to change the term. I mean, I can't speak to the fact that if someone finds it offensive,
who am I to say?
I just think that there are some cases where somebody actually does own the business.
Right, yes. Somebody's writing that check.
Yes. We may feel like, Bob, you and I, we may feel like we contribute to the product that is our company.
Right.
Neither one of us own it.
Right, correct, absolutely.
There is somebody that owns it.
Right.
It ain't us.
Not us. Not us, no. I think that's the way with every company, though. No matter who you work for, the product is primarily the labor of people. Without the labor of people, as they said, no company functions, no company works. And so is the term outdated and antiquated?
Maybe.
Yeah, maybe it is. Maybe it is that way. Maybe it is something that everybody kind of needs to take a step back and look at and see if that term is outdated and if it is a term that we need to continue to be using as it applies to everything in the world.
The Sixers have changed the title of their owners to managing partners.
Right.
And Steve Ballmer of the Clippers, clearly the owner of the Clippers.
Yep.
Right.
Yeah.
He's listed as the chairman on the team's website.
Correct.
So the NBA, I guess, taking their first step to that.
And I am the chairman of my Dodge Ram.
And I think that the more you are seeing these teams go up in value, you probably need two or three dudes to kick in the money anyway. So there's a group that controls the team, and then you appoint your CEO.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. A lot of times it's that, but a lot of times there's a singular person.
Singular owner, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Draymond Green helping to lead the way in this, apparently, but the NBA listens to its players.
It does.
Which I do like.
It's just fantastic.
I think the NBA does a really nice job. I think
the NFL leagues, doesn't know who their players are.
Other leagues, not so much. The NBA does pay attention to what their players feel and think.
Yes,
I think
they
more
do.
So than any other league. Scott in Atchison, the latest to get registered for the Father's Day gift pack. Another opportunity coming up at 7:45. Your chance to win the 7 o'clock hour prize in just a couple of minutes. We give stuff away at 7, 8, and 9 o'clock just for listening. And to chug or not to chug? It is still the question. Next.
Fesco in the morning.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.